Six Music.
Discover more mixes from Six, from some of our favourite and most exciting artists on the BBC Sounds app.
BBC Radio.
BBC Radio 6
Music.
Right now, it's Matt Everett's The First Time with Beth Ditto.
Hello, I'm Matt Everett, and you're listening to a brand new series of The First Time here on BBC 6 Music and BBC Sounds. This is the show where we meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians around and take a look at the pivotal first musical moments that made them who they are today. This evening's guest seemed when she and the band she sings with emerged in 2006 like she'd appeared from nowhere, a pre-existing star with a voice that could melt and strip hearts, a voice that was part country, part gospel and all punk rock. The reality was a lot more complicated. Their breakthrough album, Standing in the Way of Control, from which this song, Heavy Cross, was taken, was in fact their third album, and our heroine had been on quite a journey to get to that point. And that journey is still continuing, as you will find out. For the record, I really love doing this interview. My guest on The First Time today is Beth Ditto.
It's a cruel, cruel world to face on your own. A heavy cross to carry along. The lights are on, but everyone's gone, and it's cruel. It's a fun.
Beth tells me about a childhood dominated by music and singing in Arkansas and her parents' influence on her style and musical passions. And we discuss the pretty single-minded and eventful path that led up to her forming The Gossip in 1999. She talks about their slow build and then their breakthrough and her status as an NME cover star and, I quote, coolest person in the world. And we look at the real story behind Standing in the Way of Control. Plus, we talk about the band's split and reunion and the complex realities behind a group's creative musical dynamic. And we play some music, some really good music by Prince, Creedence Clearwater Revival, Skid Row, yes, Skid Row, Mumbers and the Puppers, Kim Gordon, The Slits, and Wire. But I started by asking Beth, as I do with all my guests, when was she first aware of music?
There are two memories that come to mind, and one of them is laying on, we had these like fold-out army cots. Y'all call a crib a cot, don't you? Mm-hmm. But these were like those kind of army, like one of those like director's chairs kind of cots that you would get. So I was at daycare, and I was probably around three, and every nap time they would play local country music radio over the, like they'd play it for all the kids, and we would lay down for a nap. And I remember every day, pretty much was like the same playlist, same songs every day. You know, it was like, that's radio, right? Especially back then. And so I would lay, you know, because everyone had to be quiet and had to be still. And I would make up songs to the intros.
Really?
Yeah, like write little songs to the intros. Yes. But because it would play the next day, pretty much at the same time, during nap time, I could go back and revisit the song I was writing the day before.
That's like really early on to be thinking musically.
I guess my mom will tell you, like, I was singing all the time, like from being a baby. My family's really musical. We always grew up in a house with tons and tons of music. Like, my partner now is a few years older than me, and I'm always just like amazed by how little he knows about music from the 80s. Like, my mom was 24 Inch Academy, so I think I'm the same age or just a little bit older than MTV. And before the cable company, because everything was local back then and pretty rural. So before the cable company caught on to what MTV being like, what is it? What's the word I'm looking for? Blasphemous, or like, you know, very ungodly. The local cable company stopped offering it as an option. And the time capsule that I have in my mind of having MTV for those very few years, because I had like a young hip mom, you know, like she was listening to I Want Your Sex and she was listening to Prince. There'll be some kind of reference to that era of music. People have no idea what I'm talking about sometimes. And I'm just like, I can't imagine growing up in a house without being surrounded by music. You know, like my dad listened to country, honky tonk, but he also lived and died by the Bee Gees. And like, he was obsessed with Creedence. And like, there was a lot of talk about production and sound. And even though we weren't an educated family, none of us went to school or whatever, we just really all loved music. Even my siblings, like my sister and I talk about it. She's a really big hip hop fan. She's 3 years older than me, so she's like 45. It amazes me the Spotify rapper she knows. Like, she still is like so hip about music. It's really cool. I feel really lucky to be raised like that, you know, and not even really knowing that there was an academic side of music. I didn't realize that was a thing. Like, I knew people could read music and I knew you could take band in high school and all that stuff. Yeah, I think when I heard about people taking voice lessons, I was like, what? Like, that's, it seems so wild to me because it just is like, was not a reality where I was from. You know what I mean?
Okay, so if we're going to play a song at this point in the show, maybe a song for your mom or your dad.
Oh my gosh, I would say Creedence. And I'm going to say that's for my dad. Rest in peace, Homer Ditto, looking at you. I think that we would play, what is it, Down on the Corner? Yeah.
Early in the evening, just about supper time, over by the courthouse, they're starting to unwind. Four kids on the corner, trying to bring him up. Willie picks a tune out, and he throws it on the hum. Down on the corner, out in the street, playing the folk boys are playing, bring the knickers.
Remember COD, Cash on Delivery? Like, there would always be those record sets that that they would offer on television. Do you remember those?
Yeah.
Well, my mom had gone all out. You know, we didn't have credit or whatever. I didn't know that was a thing either. So my mom had ordered the full box set vinyl, you know, record. And my dad was so happy. And the whole family was sitting in the living room. And I was about four. And I was on my mom's lap and I was in the rocking chair. Literally, the family is sitting around. Like, it's like the 30s. It's like the Grand Ole Opry. We're listening to Creedence of the Family on vinyl because it got delivered that day. But I slipped off my mom's lap and I landed on the ground and it skipped the record. It was listening to Creedence. And I'll never forget the in the room. And my dad never got angry. He was pretty much the more chill one out of the two of my parents. My mom was like,
fear God, but my dad was really chill. And I think that was the first and maybe only time I'd ever seen him actually be like, so that's my Creedence story.
What was the first record that you went out and bought for you that was yours? Amazing music around this household, but then that's different to like, I'm picking this, I'm going to the store. What was that record?
Well, I don't want to brag. Pretty cool. The first thing I bought for myself was Skid Row, 18 in Life, to single. And you remember they came in like, it looked like a crayon box almost, like those packs of eight, and they were so fragile. Okay. And I mean, back then the cover was everything, right? So it had all the information you wanted. So like, I was very like protective of that little cardboard crayon, like with Skid Row on the front of it. And like, maybe the lyrics on the back, but probably. I was talking to Rick Rubin about this, Kaz name drop. I was like, you've got to get somebody to cover 18 in Life. It would be phenomenal. It would be beautiful, like to do a country version of 18 in Life. Wow. So cool. And my first album I ever bought, the first CD I ever bought, that's not cassettes, because I could go really deep on that, but the first CD I ever bought was Mama's and the Papa's Greatest Hits, and I was 15.
Nice. Yeah. Absolute illustration about harmony and vocal blending.
That was my mom's jam. I do not have an ear for harmony. I don't have a very good ear anyway. Like, I don't really understand pitch. I just kind of got the grasp of key a few years ago, and it shows a lot sometimes. whatever, who cares? But that's one of the things. It's like with the Mamas and the Papas, she would just talk about the harmonies and how essential Mama Cass was to that group, and like how it wasn't the same before she came along. And my family are nerds. When I think about it, I'm like, God, we're info nerds. We love information. We love history. But yeah, you're right. Just the rich harmos.
On my roof, and it does not ask for proof. It's not that lovers are unkind. She always said there'd come a time when one would leave and one stay behind. We both knew people sometimes change, and lovers sometimes rearrange,
and nothing's quite as sure as change.
And the rain beats on my roof, look through my window,
to the street below,
see the people.
This is The First Time with me, Matt Everett, and my guest, Beth Ditto. More after this. 66.
It's the return of Lamac.
Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin.
Steve Lamac's Tea Time Session on 6 Music.
Yes, I'm back with a new 3-hour weekly show, showcasing our latest discoveries and some old records, a lot of new ones, some big hits, some cult favourites. Plus some exclusive first plays and some right old obscurities as well. Doesn't that bass line sound like something that could have featured on a release from Factory Records back in the early 80s?
Steve Lamac's Tea Time Sessions.
It's nice to be back in the chair. Every Monday afternoon from 4 on 6 Music.
6 Music.
Now I know you love Slits, I know you love Buzzcocks, but when did punk rock first hit you? When did punk rock change your life, as they say?
Punk rock did change my life. Well, I always feel really lucky, and I'm always wondering when a band like this or a group like this will come along again in the same way to have the impact that it did. And guess who I'm going to say? 90s kid changed the game.
Is it going to be Nirvana?
Nirvana, exactly. I remember my mother bringing home the People magazine with them on the cover. She worked in a hospital, and you know they had the magazines, and she was, "You're not supposed to take them." And my mom took that magazine for me so that I could keep it, and I still have it. With him on the cover about his suicide. It's hard to explain the impact that Nirvana and most in Kurt Cobain really had on people like me that were living in hard to reach places, that were in the Bible Belt. You couldn't not, you know, there was so much intellect and it was very accessible. They were talking about these incredibly academic, radical concepts, but they were using this like language that was really easy to understand. And it brought punk rock to the masses because he talked about, you know, he talked about Riot Girl. They took Bikini Kill on tour with them. He was married to Courtney Love. There's all these things. He was constantly talking about really cool bands. And like, I remember I was wearing the shirt that said the years that he died on. It was that shirt with the black and white picture that a lot of kids my age had. And I remember one teacher saying to me, "You know, you should pick better idols." And I was like, "What does that even mean?" I was 14. And I think about that teacher all the time because that person did so much for me and they'll never know. But like the Raincoats, the Vaselines, like all of these bands, Bikini Kill, Heavens to Betsy, Slater Kinney. And then from that was like bands like The Need and bands like Octant and Nathan of Ulysses, The Makeup, and Lung Leg, Huggy Bear. Like I could go on and on. The Yummy Fur, like it's like all of these bands that were happening in like in real time. That's what was so exciting about it, is that like knowing that there are these things happening right now somewhere in the world and that actually you can reach them. Is so insane to me. It just shows the power that people have, even though he is gone. And it was really tragic. And people were up in arms about what that meant to like, what are kids going to think? And what are kids going to do? Well, it's just like, I think I speak for a lot of kids when I'm like, I don't think my life would have been the same had Nirvana come around.
What's the Nirvana song we should play now?
This might be a very specific ask, but what I've been obsessed with lately is Jim Gordon at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame singing Aneurysm. And it is so incredible. It's so powerful. I love Kim Gordon too, so I don't know. Yeah.
We have somebody from Sonic Youth here. Kim Gordon. We'll be right back.
playlist culture meant that all of a sudden you could have AC/DC next to, you know, Aphex Twin, and it was all cool. Before that, it was difficult. People didn't have access and mix. Nirvana, everybody loved them. The Skate Kids, Stoners, and Indie Kids, everybody loved them. It was an amazing thing to see.
I'd be giving so many bands shout outs and give, you know, you don't hear that very often anymore. Maybe you do.
Yeah, but not with that power. He could say Shonen Knife, and all of a sudden Shonen Knife are playing like Thousand Cat Places, and you're like, that's brilliant. What a dude, you know?
Oh, that touched me so deeply, Matt. I don't think you know.
Another first. Tell me about the first rehearsal that the Gossip had. Either it's like, and we looked at each other and we knew we had something special, or everyone goes, this is terrible. I don't think we should do this again. But then let's just keep doing it because somehow we quite enjoy it. And then it gets good. It's one of those two things. Which one was it for you guys?
I love this question. I like the way that you put it into two camps, because I'm wondering which one will fit into, actually. You know, I grew up in Arkansas with this group of kids. We had a very specific scene. My friend Nathan, who's in Gossip, who I've known since I was 13, 14, he had kind of built this scene with a group of our friends. And the first one of us that turned 18 moved away. And then eventually, graduating like high school, we all went to Olympia, Washington, which is one of the reasons why Olympia, you know, has the music history that it does. Those little college towns really bring the best of the weirdos out of the woodworks. They really do. You know what I mean? And at that point, there were four of us living up there, all from Arkansas. We were all sharing a group house. It was a punk house, and it was gross.
What was the grossest thing about the house?
So everything was a bedroom opportunity. For instance, like, me and my best friend, also from Arkansas, shared a fold-out couch in the living room, paid rent, even rent with everybody. We all shared the same rent, by the way, to sleep on that couch, because that was even somehow. But then, you know, there were two actual bedrooms, and one of the bedrooms was turned, had a mattress stuffed into this archway that was the opening to the dining room. And that is not the gross part. Like, it's the mattress being there wasn't gross, but the mattress itself was disgusting. But the grossest thing, it wasn't the bathroom, shockingly, because I feel like we kept that pretty clean, but was the kitchen. It was so gross. Like, you could scrape just years of sadness and just like scrape the liberal arts college off of those cabinets. And when I tell you it was thick with grime, I mean, like, the floors were caked and just like there was a constant coating over everything. It was so gross. We were hardly in that kitchen because we had fast food jobs and we just would eat at work or steal food from work and bring it home for everybody, you know? So we were in that house. Also a very disgusting basement that was so bad that, like, you would think that, like, all these kids in this house that were sleeping in the living room, if there was a basement, they would sleep down there. But it was that bad. Nobody wanted to do that. So I shared the living room with my friend. But that was where we had band practice. And Nathan was in a bunch of bands in Olympia. He'd been there for a year before me. Kathy had been there 2 years before me. And so they had established friends. They had groups. But I had just moved there and I'd only been there for about 2 weeks, maybe. They were in the basement and Kathy was playing drums and she had never really played drums before, really. And then Nathan was playing guitar and Kathy ran upstairs. Remember, I was a choir kid. Like, I was really into choir and singing and whatever. And Kathy ran upstairs and she's like, Beth, do you want to come sing in our blues band? I was like, what? You remember, I was the youngest out of everybody. So I was very self-conscious. And Nathan was this cool kid. He was like years older than me. And like, he knew so much about music. And I was just like, oh my God, they're asking me to be in a band. So we wrote three songs. And then, like, I'm very loosely use the word wrote. And then Nathan came home one day from wherever he was and was like, oh, so we have a show. And that was it. And that happened over and over again until finally, you know, we had to be like, oh, if we're going to start playing shows, we need more than three songs.
Yeah.
And then later, Kenny took us on a full U.S. tour, and that changed everything. Like, I had never been anywhere. We had never been anywhere. I did not know people could be in bands for a living. I did not know. So it was that moment. So I don't know if it was like we knew we had something special, but it was definitely like, this might as well happen. Like, we can't tell people no. It was kind of like, we didn't want to let people down when they had already put you on a flight. We didn't have a name. We didn't have names for the songs. There weren't any words for the songs. It was just like, we barely had songs. So I think we went on that tour with Sledger-Kinney for 6 weeks with maybe 7 or 8 songs that were maybe 2 minutes long.
Yeah, because that tour's kind of coincided with the first EP, more or less. And that tour's a kind of big deal. As you say, it's all kind of, if there's a sort of a lighting of a fuse, the EP, that tour.
It was so weird. I learned a lot of things. I mean, I remember getting paid $100 or whatever, which was a lot of money to us, and Nathan coming out and splitting it 3 ways. Everybody get $30. And I remember Nathan being like, we wouldn't have made this much in an 8-hour work day. And all of us being like, whoa, you know? But yeah, that's how Gossip started.
We are going to talk about artists that you love. Should we talk about the Slits? Should we play a Slits track?
Yeah.
Someone that you've named track. So like there's still, there's never really been anyone quite like them. When did you first fall in love with them?
Oh, definitely in my 20s. I've heard them around, didn't own any records or anything until I was definitely like probably like 21. No, a little bit younger than that, maybe like 20, because I remember my 21st birthday and I was definitely very familiar. But it was Nathan. I still love this about Nathan. He's, you know, he lives down in Arkansas and stuff, but he still will send me links and or articles or YouTube links and stuff like that to bands that are just like these teenagers that live in the middle of Arkansas. He still has a DIY label, you know? And then everybody was obsessed with him too. You know, Hannah, I don't think people realize this, Hannah, who plays the drums in Gossip now, she was in a band called Shoplifting. And that was named after a Slit song.
Put that shit up in me pocket, put the rest under the jacket. Talk to the cashier, one suspect. And if he does, and if he does. And we have dinner tonight. Dorada. Cameras trying to watch us. Mirrors on TV. But they're not gonna catch us. Cause we're gonna run. Dorada.
Let's do the standing in the way and control question, because we could talk a lot about that track and kind of what it did. Still sounds good. And you can hear why to this day it made such an impact on people. It was kind of funny, like, hey, this band have emerged out of the blue. And you can imagine you guys going, how many truck stops have we been eating in? Like, oh, really? Are we new? But I could, fine, if that's what you want to say, fine.
How many gross carpet of friends of a friend can you sleep on? Oh, man. I think growing up in poverty really, really served me well for a like life on the road.
But like the session, I'm sure you can remember the actual session itself. Can you remember the red light going on and everyone, 1, 2, 3, 4, see you on the other side, and getting out to the other side of the song and going, yeah, that's it. We got it. We got the one. Can you remember that?
I'll tell you the moment that I remember. There's a few things about that. Sorry. But I remember the night before we wrote that song. It's like, it was just what it was. Until then, every song had been second verse, same as the first, Ramon style. I was very afraid to write words. I still don't enjoy it. I remember we wrote that song when Kathy was still in the band. And I remember, you know, that moment you were talking about? This is where it fits into that camp where you look at each other and you're like, whoa, this is different. We never take ourselves seriously. We still don't really take ourselves seriously, which is why it's still fun. But like, I remember looking at Nathan and Kathy and all of us being like,
that just happened. I mean, I hate to be like, it was organic, but it was. It was just like what it was. It was just a moment. And then being like, whoa. But the night before that, my friend had called me and was not doing great. He was my best friend who I shared the fold-out couch with and was my first real queer gay friend. And we grew up together in Arkansas. And he was just struggling really hard. And I had moved 2 hours away and neither one of us had a car or a license. And like, who could afford the bus or the train to go up there? Neither one of us. And he was just having such a hard time. And Bush was in office. And like, we're just talking about how being queer and like coming out to his family was really hard. Luckily, my family is really cool and awesome. But he is a very stereotypical Southern redneck family. And then it just came to me that like, I was just in this mood. It was just really sad and dark. And I was so mad that he had to be going through what he was going through. And I had to be going through what I was going through. And that all my queer friends were just in this. It felt like we were in limbo, you know? And then it just came out.
Your back's against the wall.
And that's what it was. So there was that moment. And the other one was, we wanted to go on tour with La Tigra, but Kathy has always been the responsible one, always been the responsible one. She's a middle school counselor now, and we are not. And, you know, at that time, I was like, I'm never going to see Bikini Kill. That's never going to happen. And it did later. But I was like, I want to be around these people. So we got Hannah to cover for her. And the moment that Hannah played the drums on Standing in the Way of Control, it was so insane. I looked at Nathan and he looked at me and we were both like, we both knew. We were like, it's so different that like we can't go back. And not because of Kathy, her style was incredible, but also it was just that she needed something that me and Nathan just did not have a strive for. I didn't want to work in a pizza shop. I didn't want to do that. And if I could barely get by making music, then that's what I wanted to do. And so Nathan and I made the decision and those were the moments of Standing in Way of Control. That's the very long-winded answer.
Live our lives.
And it is special to me, 20 years old. And I think it's the best feeling ever. I say this a lot, but, you know, I feel like there's this thing about like women aging out of music and aging out of the public eye and like whether or not you're relevant. And the best thing about coming from a punk scene and coming from a punk scene that is like a radical feminist and queer punk scene is that we have this completely different idea of success. We have a completely different idea of morality. We have a completely different timeline for ourselves. And just to be here this much time later and people still talk about that song is like, you know, out of control. And how it touches people, you know, like drag queens will do it, and like I'll see that people send me like message it to me on Instagram or something, and I'll just be like, this is why you make things, this is what you do. It just feels like you're part of something bigger, and it makes me feel so, I hate to be like hashtag blessed, but it's just like I feel really grateful and like I'm part of something bigger, you know.
I probably shouldn't say this, but I never like it when you get artists that like they don't play the big song, or they don't, and it's like, you've got a big song, shut up, like you are hashtag blessed, like come on, play the song, guys.
This is my thing, because I get mad at that too. I'm like, I did not come to hear your B-side solos. Not all the time. There are some bands that I'm like, I would follow them into a drainage ditch. But like sometimes I'm like, I kind of want to hear single ladies. You know, it's like, it's that thing where you're like, why? Because you're so afraid to like be a one hit wonder or whatever that is. Well, you are creating that reality for you. Like what people say about you, it's like, that's going to outlive you. Imagine if I just showed up and I just did like a screaming solo for like, just like an art piece, like a Yoko Ono cover, just like for hours. And you're just like, no, I don't get it. I'm a crowd pleaser. One of those people. I'm like, pander, sure, whatever. Like whatever gets the people excited.
Yeah. Because after that, everything changes. After that, like you're the center of the galaxy for a while for a lot of people. And everyone wants to hear everything you say. And everything you say is super witty and super funny. And everything you do and wear and like is all of a sudden you're that person. Even if you're not, the rest of the world thinks you are, right? So how did you deal with that? Do you think you cope with it well?
I was as far removed from it. I was in America. No one gives a shit about us here. And that's awesome. Like, it's so awesome because like, it's funny that we're having this conversation because I was just talking to someone last night. She's our PR person, Julie. She's incredible. I love her so much. I've known her for years and worked with her for 15 years or something. And that's since I was 28. That's a long time ago. And she was like, you know, there's the fashion stuff. I like to come to London for my birthday. I like, it's February and it just coincides with fashion week and stuff like that. And I think that's really fun. I actually really enjoy it. If I didn't, I wouldn't do it. She was like, we tried to get you some things in Berlin or something. And she's like, they've got a really cool fashion scene, but you're just too mainstream in Germany. And I was like, it's so funny to me. Because like,
too mainstream.
Yeah. But then I'm like, fair enough. That's fine with me. It doesn't bother me. I'm like, wow, what a world. Like, what a world. Like, what a, but I have this naive part of me that I still have to this day where I think everyone had the experience that I did. I don't know if it's privilege and it's being blind to it, but probably that's some of it and maybe a lot of it. But like, I'm always like, what do you mean? I look like so many fat girls just like me. Like we all have black hair. We all have bouffants. We are all in bands. We're all making something. We're all, you know, wearing eyeliner. I don't know. So to me, that was the funniest part of it. It felt odd and it felt uncomfortable because I was like, I know so many people that are better at songwriters than me. They are cooler than me. They have better fashion or style than me. And it kind of felt uncomfortable for that because I was just like, I really wanted to serve the scene that I was in.
Okay. Yeah.
I wanted to represent it right. I mean, I wouldn't have used those words then, but I knew that like, I always wanted to do the right thing. I think there are so many things I just did not realize were weird to people. Like there's the story about the first time I got stoned and a magazine had asked me, I think it was the NME actually, had asked us early on what our first story about smoking pot was. And mine was the story about my cousin and I was like 13 or 14 and I smoked weed with my cousin who was a year older than me. And then he slides the window open and he starts shooting squirrels. And then because he had the munchies, he goes around and he cleans them and he eats them. That's the first time I got stoned. So to me, that story was very normal. And then people were like, wait a minute, what? You know, it was like, I didn't know that other people didn't eat squirrels. I didn't know. And that's completely genuine. I think that a lot of the thing people have been like, oh, she's outlandish. It's just that I don't think it would have changed me, but I genuinely didn't know. I was just young, you know? And I love that. I'm really happy about it.
BBC Radio
6 Music.
We're giving you access all areas on BBC iPlayer. 6 Music's artists in residence. Triple A with Mitski and Loyal Khanna.
Hello, I'm Mitski. Myself and my producer are going to go over some of the tracks we created together.
Find out the creative process of your favorite artists.
We're going to give you an insight into how it all comes together.
What's going on? It's your boy Loyal Khanna, and I'm a 6 Music artist in residence. I'm taking you on an Access All Areas tour behind the scenes to show you how I make up my music.
Watch on BBC iPlayer now. Search Artist in Residence.
BBC Radio 6 Music. It's Matt Everett's The First Time with Beth Ditto.
6 Music.
Do another artist that you love. Should we do Melanie? Should we do Roberta Flack?
Ooh.
Should we do some Bowie, some Nina Hagen? Where should we go next?
It's hard because I have so many like on my mind. You know what I've been listening to a lot lately is Pink Flag by Wire. I've just been really into X Lion Tamer. Just listening to that song and repeat because sometimes I just can't get enough guitar. Like I just love it so much. I'm always just like, yes, the age of guitar. Like solid riffs. And I know that sounds so silly, but I really am just like, I miss that, you know?
There's great danger for the loneliest stranger in town. No silver bullets. Not to split the scene. Next thing we'll solve your problems. But now, with fingers holding the Lord. Look up distance.
That's one of my favorite things about bands like the Arctic Monkeys is like they have such beautiful guitar parts. Nothing in the last few years has been as catchy and beautiful and gets stuck in my head as much as da 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 da. Da, 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 da. And it's very rare when a song like that, where the melody, the vocal melody and the riff follow each other, that I'm like, whoa, something about that just is so beautiful.
When bands break up, you don't know what's going on. And also, the public never really know and will ever never really know what happens, no matter how honest a musician is. And you could be Mick Jagger or like someone with a band that's just starting up. Outside the band, you're never going to know. We're never going to know. But what can you say about why was it time to stop?
Oh, my God. I think one of the things that people don't understand about being in a band and needing a break or time or giving each other space to change and grow is that, especially if you've grown up together and you're all the other one knows, you know, in a way, it's like marrying your high school sweetheart. And working with them. And, you know, I look about in like retrospective, I could have just been like, I need a break. I need time away from these people, or I need time away from this world. I want to know what it's like to write music with other people. I want to know, you know, and that's the thing is that there's this, especially with women where it's like, there's this, like, they think people have a diva complex and they're like, oh, she thinks she needs to go solo. You know, like Nathan was in a million bands. And one of the things I love about being in the band with those two is that like we all have different things that we want to do. We have all like, because I remember a big question was always like, people would be like, well, how do your bandmates feel that you're doing a fashion line? Or how do your bandmates feel that you're doing a solo EP? And I was like, the only people who care are other people. Like it's odd. There's this idea that you think that you're bigger than the rest of people and like they're holding you back. And you're like, no, I just wanted to do something else. They never understand that you can't go to a label where you can't say to people, I just need to not make a record for 10 years. You can't say that. And I need all the time that I need. You can't say that in a job. So you really do have to be like, I can't do this anymore because labels will drop you. Agents won't want to, you know, it's like a thing. So I really think that was a big part of it is like, I just needed to be in touch with something else. Like when you're tethered to certain people creatively, it's really awesome. And then sometimes you're just like, what else am I capable of? You know, it's not about ego. I mean, it can be certainly, but like, it felt more like I was just like, I need to get away from this dynamic for a while and figure myself out. Because like, one of the things that you said that's so right is like, I got this from the American Office, but it's so true. It's like sometimes relationships look different to the people who aren't in them. You know, like you think you understand what's going on, but like you don't. And for me, I was just like, if I can't have a break, if I can't tell you I can't do this for 3 more months, if I just can't do this anymore. If it was all or nothing, nothing was fine with me.
One step closer.
So after talking about a breakup of a band, best thing that happens is when the band gets back together again. And A, you can tell, right, if they want to do it. You can always tell, right? But the other thing, I like it when, obviously, bands as people are kind of opaque. You can't, as we're just talking about, you can't see the internal dynamics of a relationship because that belongs to those people. That's theirs. And we can assume and talk about it. However, when a band gets back together and they get on stage and you watch it and you look at that band looking at each other, you can see everything positive. You can see that joy again. You're like, oh my God. And she knows that that was a difficult song to write and she probably hated him. But now look at them. They're looking at each other going, yeah, it's brilliant. And you can see it's so wonderful. It's a brilliant thing. So I guess that's, yeah, the flip side.
I am excited about that. I mean, we haven't played a show so long, but like, we always have so much fun. I remember after we made Music for Men, I think that was in 08, he said to me, he was like, Beth, you have got to stop telling people in interviews that Gossip is a band you go see and not a band you listen to. Because we all really do like playing shows, especially a long time ago. I was like, we are much more a band that you go see. Like, I think it's more fun to watch than listen to or be a part of than listen to. Yeah, I got busted for that because I really believe that. And I think maybe that's just me projecting because I think I have more fun.
Yeah. Also kind of nice having a comeback single when people, oh, it's going to be this huge, big, bombastic. Oh, actually, this is kind of more atmospheric and a bit more thoughtful. And like, I quite enjoyed that misstep that you gave everybody. It was kind of, it's always nice to be surprised, I think.
Thank you for saying that. I'm glad you were surprised. Like, it wasn't intentional. I think that for the most part of it, it was just like not trying to make something that people were expecting, just making something.
Yeah.
I think that's the best part is like when you come together as grown people, you know, as 40-year-olds who have experience and you've actually been writing songs for a long time, you're not 18 years old being like, okay, we have to go on tour with this band for 6 weeks. We need 4 more songs. And then those get recorded. That doesn't happen anymore. You actually had time to like maybe believe in yourself a little bit more or let go of like, are people going to like this? Are people going to want to hear this? That's none of your business. And when you get caught up in that idea of trying to please people, like with the sound or whatever you're going to make, I think you just, I mean, it's so, people can tell when something's not genuine. Really, the truth is it doesn't have anything to do with you or me. It has everything to do with you, nothing with me. Like, but yeah, you can't be everybody's favorite band. You can't. And people are going to hate you just like the way that you hate music. You know, that's the thing is like people are so sensitive sometimes. And I'm just like, well, you're just a band. Like they don't know you. Like they're not coming over to your house. They're not judging the way that you treat your friends. You know, they just don't like that song and that's okay. Or they think your personality is grating. Who cares? They're not your friend, you know?
A final question. We'd like you to pick the song that we finish the show with. What should we go out on? Beth, it could be one of yours, it could be one of someone else's, something you've loved forever, something you've just listened to this morning.
Track 8 from my solo EP. No, can you imagine if I said that? I think the song that I'd like to end on today is by Shocking Blue, and it's called Rock in the Sea.
Why are we ending on that song?
Because it's kind of a somber song, but it's so upbeat. Like, it just, like, one of the lines is, only the beauty of nature matters to me. And even though I'm not a nature person, I much more prefer a city. The idea of just, like, accepting what you love and that being like what you surround yourself with is really beautiful. And like this song is just, it's really upbeat and really incredible. It's one of the most perfect songs and it's silly a little bit, but it's perfect.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I wish
Shocking Blue with Rock in the Sea, the final choice of my guest here on The First Time this evening, Beth Ditto. And you may know Beth's band, Gossip, their first album in 11 years, Real Power, will be released on March the 22nd. And we're very happy to say that the band will be playing this year's Six Music Festival, which is taking place from the 7th to 10th of March in Manchester, alongside some other amazing acts, including Young Fathers and The Smile. And that's the end of this show. I'll be back tomorrow with another chance to hear a classic first time, as we'll be revisiting my interview with Laurie Anderson. And of course, you can listen back to previous first time shows from this season on BBC Sounds, which include John Grant, Holly Johnson, Kate Le Bon, Stormzy and David Holmes. Until then, I've been Matt Everett. Thanks for listening.